Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Alexander Stiller, who is a San Paolo Professor of International Journalism at Columbia University. He is the author of Benevolence and Betrayal, Five Italian Jewish Families Under Fascism, Excellent Cadavers, The Mafia and the Death of the First Italian Republic, The Future of the Past, and The Sack of Rome, How a Beautiful European Country with a Fabled History and a Storied Culture Was Taken Over by a Man Named Silvio Berlusconi. Welcome to Background Briefing, Alexander Stiller.
Thanks for having me.
Let me begin, though, some of your writings about Berlusconi, who appears to be finally, apparently, prepared to exit the scene, although he's not even entirely clear about that. You've suggested that the era of Berlusconi has turned Italians' political life into something that resembles some strange cross between a Mexican soap opera and Suetonius' description of the imperial excesses of the Caesars. What was his appeal, then, given the brazen and embarrassing nature of his tenure?
Well, his appeal is based on some quite real and solid things, along with other things that we can discuss. Initially, he entered politics because the five main center-right parties that had together in coalition governed Italy during the post-World War II period all dissolved in the wake of a huge corruption investigation that happened in the early 1990s, leaving almost half of the Italian electorate effectively unrepresented. Berlusconi, with his huge personal fortune and media empire, was in a position to fill that void. So he was serving a genuine need that part of the electorate had, which was to be represented, and he was able to do it more ably than others. Also, some of the things that Americans might find hard to understand, his corruption charges against him, that he could continue functioning as a politician with so much negative baggage, works differently in Italy in that, for example, Italy has the largest concentration of small businesses in Italy among Western European countries, I think 3 million. Small businesses of 5 employees or fewer, these are kind of mom-and-pop shops, and they function in part by not declaring all of their income and taxes. And so they are cooking their books. So having a prime minister who has legal problems of his own isn't altogether unwelcome. He's not going to send the tax inspector after you the way some other parties might. And so that actually has a constituency. So things that would be a liability in other places aren't necessarily there. And the third factor is the continuing reach of his media, his ability to use it. And, 70% of Italians get their news from television. And a lot of the things that you or others might have been shocked by or amused by are in some cases not even explained on Italian TV. For example, when Berlusconi called a German deputy in the European Parliament a concentration capo, that was not broadcast on the main state channel.
Was when he called Obama suntanned and his wife suntanned, did that come through?
Well, that got a little bit, but, it always with Berlusconi's spin on it. I'm just joking. What's the matter? Doesn't everybody have a sense of humor? And, there you are dealing also with a cultural blind spot. Italians are not used to dealing in much with people of color, and therefore they're not sensitized to those issues. So that also would have just played differently there than it would here, where we have such a long history with problems of race. But also, for example, the things that, I remember when Berlusconi at a meeting of the European heads of state said, let's lighten things up and talk about soccer and women, and turned to German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder and said, you, Gerhard, who have had 4 wives, why don't you talk to us about women? This went over very badly and was considered a gaffe. And I thought about it, how could such a smart man say something so foolish? And then I thought, well, what are the two main topics of conversation at the average Italian bar? They're soccer and women. And so there's a kind of populist appeal that Berlusconi has that's actually quite recognizable in our political culture. Many of our politicians go out of their way to mangle their syntax and to leave the G off of their gerunds and saying just hanging around in order to sound like ordinary guys, to build a kind of interclass appeal and a kind of populist, just folks kind of manner. And Berlusconi does the same thing. There's a populism in his womanizing, in his joking around, even in off-color jokes. It has a kind of populist appeal, and Berlusconi, one of the secrets to his success, is having had a cross-class appeal, winning working-class voters who would have traditionally voted for the left because they identify with him personally, even if they don't agree with all of his policies and in some cases are actually hurt by them.
Well, of course, the fact that he's sort of a wink and a nod to the average Italian who doesn't pay their taxes, the bill is now due, given the shuddering cost of Italy's debt, which has now reached the critical 7 points, which is considered unsustainable. And of course, you've suggested that the way that he has been successful is he's kept information out of the press about what's really happening with the economy, and those that were crying, trying to point out what was really happening, he attacked them as defeatists.
Mm-hmm.
I think as a predicate, though, you have to describe, I think, the history of Italian politics in the post-Cold War era, given the Cold War construction of the Christian Democrats as a ruling party, suitcases full of CIA cash along with the Vatican in this idea of keeping the left out of power. Similar thing happened in Japan with the ruling party there. How is it now, since the Cold War is over? Has there been a redress, given the initial concern was of the Italian left taking over? Because, after all, during World War II, the communists were the only ones who fought the fascists, and there was a legacy of support for them.
Mm-hmm.
And we, of course, here in the United States, did everything we could to keep them down in the fear that they would
Well, one of the things that's contributed to the crisis of Italy and one of the things that's helped keep Berlusconi in power is that the left, which is composed in part of pieces of the former Italian Communist Party, doesn't itself have a clear vision of what it wants to do. Its support is fragmented, and it doesn't have an entirely clear vision. You know, Berlusconi, part of his appeal was that he offered a very clear dream or vision. He could actually make people dream. What he offered them was a kind of fantasy. It was a kind of sugar rock candy mountain of unlimited prosperity that he would somehow be able to produce. The left, instead, a little bit like the Democrats in this country, have become the belt tighteners, the people who soberly want to roll up their sleeves and bring the accounts of state into balance. So they're offering a kind of slightly kinder, gentler version of market democracy, but they're also very big on responsibility and bringing the financial house into order. And while that's entirely necessary, it doesn't make people dream and it doesn't get people excited. And it's a very far cry from the kind of workers' paradise the left was able to hold out as a vision in the past. And so the left hasn't really rearticulated what it is, what kind of society it wants to create, other than a slightly more efficient, slightly more humane version of the capitalist society that Berlusconi represents. And so there's a crisis on the left as well as a crisis on the right.
Well, Alexander Stiller, you have described Berlusconi as he's escaped this endless drip. He survived 50 no-confidence votes, and more than 50, I believe. He's also, at this point, currently defended in 3 trials for bribery, tax fraud, abuse of power, and paying for sex with a 17-year-old girl. Presumably, if he leaves power, he'll lose some of his immunity. But what you've described it as is the personization of power. So
yes.
Is he a sort of a Donald Trump with real money, or could you describe him as a Rupert Murdoch with a libido?
Well, I think all those things. I once wrote that, you know, if you combine the fortune of Bill Gates with the star power of Arnold Schwarzenegger with the media power and aggressiveness of a Rupert Murdoch, threw in ABC, CBS, and NBC into the bargain, and the kind of swagger of a big sports owner like Ted Turner or
Mark Cuban, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You'd get a little bit of the combined flavor and power of somebody like Berlusconi. So he combines a lot of elements that are very recognizable in American life, the entrepreneur in politics like Ross Perot, the politics of anti-politics, which we see a great deal of here, where, let's say, Sarah Palin says, you know, it's enough to be a mom to know what to do when you get into office, as if there's nothing in particular you need to know about policy or programs, that almost willfully saying, or Herman Cain saying, I don't need to know the names of the heads of states, regarding politics as a dirty negative field, and therefore the farther you away are from it and the less you know about it, you actually get a certain street credibility with some voters. So Berlusconi has played on elements that are actually quite common to politics around the world. We saw in the Murdoch scandal that unfolded earlier this year, elements that were very eerily similar to what goes on in Italy, the using of tabloids to intimidate people, break stories that embarrass people, or the threat of doing that, keeping politicians at your heel. So there are all kinds of things that Berlusconi has used that are very much part of the world that we all live in, that are part of the way politics are done these days.
Well, Alexander Stiller, though, it's one thing to have contempt for politics in the way that Herman Cain proudly doesn't know any world leaders, but it's another thing to have contempt for democracy, which I think you could make that argument. I mean, it's probably no accident that Berlusconi's quite close to Vladimir Putin of Russia. You know, the fact that he's brought in former showgirls into parliament, made two of them government ministers, brought in a couple of dozen showgirls in their mid-20s to become candidates for the European Parliament. One was a weather girl for his television network. Again, it may be amusing, but isn't there an element of contempt for democracy?
There is. There is a strong authoritarian streak to Berlusconi, and I read just the other day a somewhat disturbing polling study that showed the percentage of Italians that value democracy has gone down quite a bit, and those who consider either no difference between an authoritarian government and a democratic one or prefer an authoritarian one has grown quite a bit, that the kind of weakening of the institutions that Berlusconi has done by personalizing power in the way that he's had has a very corrosive effect on democracy. And we do see elements, you mentioned Putin, and that's a good example. You also have things like Hugo Chavez's Venezuela, where you have a formal democracy. Elections are held every so often, but media is heavily controlled, and government is used to reward friends and punish enemies, and you have something that's a kind of weird hybrid between a kind of populist democracy with authoritarian streak to it, and Berlusconi is kind of somewhat in that ilk.
So just in closing then, Alexander Stiller, he's trying to come across as being a responsible party here. I mean, even though he was caught writing traitor as the vote went against him, and I think eight of his own deputies in the lower chamber defected, the entire opposition didn't show up for the vote. So he can make the argument, well, that I'm sacrificing myself for the health of Italy. But he's also suggesting that maybe there'll be new elections, and he suggested that the alternative to him would be European technocrats, which I guess is a dig at Brussels. What do you think is the likely outcome of this latest turn in this endless soap opera?
Well, I mean, I think that from what we've seen today, in which the markets in Italy reacted very badly to the fact that Berlusconi's plans were unclear and his resignation was conditional, may force him out of power sooner. I think it's, you know, likely that Italy is going to have to, because we are in the middle of an economic emergency. The current parliament will have to come together with an austerity package, which is somehow convincing to Europe and convincing to the economic markets and calms down this kind of panic, and then that they will have to proceed toward elections in relatively short order, because it's clear that Berlusconi has lost the mandate of heaven. He doesn't have the confidence of the country and of his own majority behind him. So one of the things that the opposition would like to do is to go to elections with a new electoral law, because Berlusconi passed an electoral law favorable to him before the last elections, reintroducing a proportional system, which has led to a lot of fragmentation. So we may get a new electoral law and elections, and then we'll see what happens.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Alexander Stiller.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Alexander Stiller, who's the San Paolo Professor of International Journalism at Columbia University. He has been a contributor to the New York Times, La Repubblica, the New York Review of Books. He's the author of Benevolence and Betrayal, Five Italian Jewish Families Under Fascism, Excellent Cadavers, The Mafia and the Death of the First Italian Republic, The Future of the Past, and The Sack of Rome, How a Beautiful European Country with a Fabled History and a Storied Culture Was Taken Over by a Man Named Silvio Berlusconi. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the very hopeful results in democratic elections that took place yesterday here in the United States. By the time
twisted. I'll be out of your life, gone forevermore, but I guess I'll survive. I'm gonna leave my records